first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, yes, it's that time again. Welcome to the Ed Springson Show right here on the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. You can go for all the latest we've got going and listen to replays of the show as well. It is a fabulous Monday here in Louisville. I tell you what, 60s today. It's just been beautiful out. Of course, we got cold air coming in a couple of days with rain, and there's going to be snow all over the nation again. Who knows if it's going to hit us or not. But you can't ask for a better spring day than today. And how are you, Mr. Martin?
All right, but, you know, I was just thinking about, as you're sitting there talking about the beautiful weather, you know, if I'm going to stop what I'm doing and get on the phone, weather's like this, I need a raise, man.
Well, you know, we both need raises. I can add more zeros to that paycheck you get. That's the best I can do, brother.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know, Ed Martin does not get paid for this program. So, you know, he does this out of the kindness of his heart, I guess. But I tell you, Ed, we've always got something going on. And the story that won't go away, though, I want to start with this tonight if we can. The story that won't go away is a Louisville Metro Ethics Commission and Jim King. Last week we were talking about Janice Rucker and the charges she had brought forth against Jim King, and we told everybody then that they were going to be thrown out. This Metro Ethics Commission isn't going to do anything to Jim King. And Thursday night at the Ethics Commission hearing, lo and behold, that's what happened. The Louisville Metro Ethics Commission Thursday night dismissed all...
Put on your surprise face. What?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Well, everybody knows I'm not surprised by anything with these goons anymore. But, you know, it's just fascinating that he can continue to get away with this stuff. And they continue doing the same argument, which is a lie. They continue saying, in the case of Ms. Rucker, there were three complaints there. They said two were untimely and the third lacked probable cause. Well, here's the thing. The two that they say were untimely were because these charges were brought more than 1 year after the fact. But these guys don't even know their own rules. Clearly by the own ethics code, or the code of ethics and everything else that they use as their guidelines, all the complaints have to be done within 1 year or within 1 year of reasonable discovery. Well, a lot of people started looking into Jim King and other council members, you know, and reasonably discovered this after the Barbara Shanklin trial. You know, and the only reason the Ethics Commission went on this long was because they were scared of backlash from the West End community and the African-American community. That's just the truth of it. I know people say that sounds racist, But it's the truth, because Janis Rucker basically made the same charges that I made back in October. Mine were dismissed as well, but they were dismissed right out of the gate. Everything they've done now, this is the second or third hearing, so they wanted to try to act like they were doing something. And I tell you, it should be an insult to everybody in Louisville that this Ethics Commission continues to pick and choose what they want to go after. What do you think, man?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And besides, you know, it's just like you said, 1 year after discovery. I mean, basically what you're saying when you write a law like that, you know, 1 year, is that if you can bury it for a year, if you can keep people silent for a year, I guess you can pretty much do anything you damn well want if you keep it covered up for a year. You know,
well,
if you're the president of the Metro Council, why not? You know, it's like, really? I mean, I can't think of any other situation, any other, not in business, not in the private sector with your taxes. I can't think of anything that you can get away, that you can do, and then if somebody doesn't figure it out a year later, you know, you're a kid, all income free, you know, wow.
Just, right.
It amazes me they write the rule. Hey, guys, first thing is you do a rewrite of the rule and make it like 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it, you know, and that's exactly it. They need to rewrite the rules or do something here, because this is an insult to anybody of any intelligence. They wrote the code of ethics to allow opportunities if it goes beyond 1 year, and these are perfect examples of this, you know. And it's just disturbing that Janis Rucker was treated this way. And I tell you, what's really fascinating is the commission itself went into an hour long executive session, closed session. Of course, they always do that. You know, they do that whenever they think anybody's going to catch on to them. So the commission, you know, they adjourned, went into this hour long closed executive session, you know. And, you know, there was a group of community members in there that were insisting that the commission speak publicly on this, which they did not do. But they always go to close executive session. But what's fascinating is they asked if there were any questions. Janis Rucker, the one who brought the charges, was trying to ask questions. And Jonathan Ritz, the guy who heads the commission, said, no, we're closed. We're not taking any more questions. Just ruled her out of order because they didn't want to answer what their findings were. And a gentleman by the name of Donnie Morris, he's a West End activist and a citizen there, you know, he stood up to the commission and said he's sick and tired of this, that the commission itself is out of order, that this whole thing is definitely wrong. And he said that there's some people who need to look into this commission. And Mr. Morris, I agree. What's fascinating, what's even more fascinating here, Ed, I want to get your opinions on this, but what's even more fascinating here is Deborah Kent, longtime Louisville political insider, is the attorney for the commission. She's the attorney for the commission now, I should say. She refused to comment after the meeting. But Deborah Kent, in my opinion, and one of the reasons I agree with Mr. Morris, is because Deborah Kent has a habit and a history of contacting people that have filed complaints outside of the Ethics Commission hearing. You know, and I'll give you an example. When I filed my complaint back in October, Deborah Kent was calling me wanting to talk to me about my complaint. Can't do that. Once that complaint is filed, the Ethics Commission has to take up that complaint. Now, they can question me or anything else they want to if I'm at the hearing, during the official hearing. They can do anything they want to do. They can ask me a question they want to. I've got no problem with that. If they're there, I don't have to be there. That's the beauty of it. But Deborah Kent makes phone calls to me, of all people, knowing that is unethical, to say the least. And Deborah Kent has consistently hounded and called Janis Rucker during this whole process about her complaints. Now, this is an attorney working for the Ethics Commission calling complainants outside of the legal proceeding, if you will. That's like a judge calling a lawyer and telling lawyers how he's going to rule before he ever gets to the ruling, or a lawyer calling the judges and trying to discuss a case out of the courtroom. It's just not ethical. That's one thing that we have to address right away. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if you're at opposing sides, you know, one lawyer that's representing or overseeing something, I'm not a lawyer, but you don't talk. I mean, once things have gone legal, the response is, and any lawyer should know it is, you can talk to my attorney. You can contact my attorney. You don't get to talk to the people anymore. But
right.
You know, to me, again, I tend to agree with any activist, anybody that wants to stand up and say this. I mean, if it's closed door, you know, we don't know what goes on behind. And that's the thing. We're talking about ethics. And in the midst of talking about ethics, you know, the best solution for ethical lapses and for improved ethics is transparency. So the first thing they do is become non-transparent. They become opaque. They close the door and they say, you know, who knows what happens at that point? That's, you know, that's when you end up with the Shanklin 7 or something. Behind closed doors, somebody, you know, again, somebody looks at somebody else and says, yeah, okay, you know what, guess what? You're 1 year, you know, you're not too deep on this either. You have an offense that maybe you did 16 months ago, you know, reasonable discovery. Somebody can reasonably discover you, and, you know, everybody backs off. So we don't know what was said. I mean, it's entirely possible somebody basically, you know, what gets said at these things is the same damn thing over and over. Yeah, we all know what we all did. You want to bring these charges?
Well,
you want to play fire? Go for it.
Well, one of the things here, I mean, you know, as far as the closed door session, the executive session, you know, I really don't have that many problems with that. A lot of people are going to say, oh, my goodness, you don't believe in openness. No, I do believe in openness and transparency. But what you have to do is realize what the Ethics Commission does. You bring a complaint to them. They argue the complaint. They go into executive session to determine the guilt or innocence. That's what it's supposed to be. It's just like a jury in a trial. We don't let a jury have a videotaped live feed from WDRB News or somebody, you know, during deliberations. That's what they're doing in executive session. So that I have no problem with. But the fact that an attorney, and in my opinion, an unethical attorney like Deborah Kent, thinks that she has a right to contact plaintiffs or defendants outside of this avenue, the legal avenue, that's disturbing to me. And I'll be honest with you. From my experience, a lot of these attorneys that have had to be involved in the government corruption and the different cases that I've brought, in my experience and in my opinion, most of these damn attorneys should be disbarred because I think most of them are unethical. I really do. Private practice, no. These government attorneys that get into the government politics, they play politics too much and they're compromised. And I don't think they should have the right to decide anything. That's been my experience anyway. That's all I can talk about. But, you know, it's very disturbing for me anyway. So, you know, but moving on, Ed, we've got another little story. I was kind of surprised by this. Matt Bevin, I guess, he's so far down in the polls, he even took a chance on writing to the Courier-Journal and basically an op-ed piece of his own, touting himself, talking about how he's been treated since he got into the race. You know, one of the things he had to say to the Courier today was, when we're through with you, the people who sit behind you in church will get up and move when you come in. He said that was one of the many pieces of advice that he was given to try to keep him from running against Mitch McConnell in the primary. And then he went on to say that there were some less subtle. Did you read that story today?
No. I don't get the Courier, so I don't. But, you know,
well, I don't either. I get it online.
Anymore, I've said something about it the other day. Ever since I've heard that one commercial where they're bashing Haberman over his decision and trying to hang it on McConnell, I'm to a point right now. I mean, I hate to say it. You know, Bevin, again, we talked about it very early on, had an opportunity to make it about issues, had a, you know, constitutional living, but no. Now they've gone to gay baiting and things like, it's like, I'm done with it. I am to the point, it's either, God, I hate the thought, you know, I'm not a real fan of Mitch, but I'm to the point, I'm looking for a different candidate.
Well,
somebody,
you know, and
I mean,
I'll be honest with you. This campaign, I've said from the very beginning, was being run by amateurs who had no clue what they were doing. I mean, everything, even the media buys are being done by a media company out of Indiana instead of Kentucky, who he wants to represent. You know, it's the little things that make a difference. But, you know, it's interesting to me because, you know, as you pointed out, we have reached out to Matt Bevin on more than one occasion here at MVM Radio and LouisvillePolitics.com, and never received any response from these guys. Folks, I'm going to tell you, we are the top news, political news, especially here in Louisville, and, you know, you don't want to turn that down. We have done everything we can to get a hold of these guys. There have been people that have spoken that are prominent community leaders that have spoken to Matt Bevin and told him he needed to get with us and talk with us, but he just don't respond. You know, so I don't know what to tell you about this guy. He's avoiding everything he can get, but he'll go on Glenn Beck, you know, or something like that for this national TV audience, you know, so people in, I don't know, Colorado could tell him what a god he is. They can't vote for him. You know, that's my problem. He makes time available for the people who can't do 1 ounce of good and ignores the thousands and thousands of voters that come to this show and our website. So I don't get the guy. I really don't. One day he's up, the next day he's down. But one thing that's consistent is he's running way, way behind Mitch McConnell. And the only way he's going to make up any ground at all is to spend a fortune on ad buys. And, you know, because when he talks to people, most of the people that I've talked to that have met him have been turned off by him. I just don't see any realistic chance of this guy winning. And I hate to say that. You know, I don't want to put myself out on that limb. But do you think I'm wrong?
No, I mean, from the very beginning, I didn't, you know, it's hard to believe you have a chance against a long-term, well-financed sitting incumbent. They've got the machine behind them. But, uh-huh. I mean, if you're going to represent, and let's be honest, sometimes the Tea Party wing of the party has some credibility issues, has some agenda issues sometimes, you know, and that they've hooked up with this guy. Like I said, being a former registered libertarian, nowadays a Republican with a libertarian pedigree, which you would think, well, hell, way back in the day, you'd have thought that the Tea Party would have lined up behind me. But I can look at it, and it's just a lot of the stuff he's saying does not sync up with being a small government conservative. And I've met him. I actually liked him. We had a good, you know, we talked economics. Go figure. It's good, you know. I like the guy, but the more, you know, it's like this ad came out. I have to be honest. I know the ad I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I was actually embarrassed. My daughter was driving her to school when this ad came on, and she looked at me like, Is that ad real? And I said, yeah. and I'm registered with the party that candidate's running for. So, wow.
Oh, I hear you. That must have been Megan. I hear you.
Nicole just looked at me like, is that ad real? Or is that like a joke? And I said, no. Oh, God. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, no.
It's just disturbing because I tell you, you know, I honestly think that if, you know, I mean, I don't have nothing personal against the guy. I've actually never met Matt Bevin. He hasn't chosen to return any requests or anything else. We could actually meet and talk about anything. Don't even return phone calls. You know, I would love to sit down with the guy and bring it to our listeners. But, you know, at the end of the day, the people I've talked to just said that he's pretty standoffish, that he doesn't want to hear anything anybody else has to say, that the only thing he's interested in is making sure that you hear what he has to say. So he's not a good listener, or certainly not a good talker. And it's really hard not to like a guy who has made a success of his life. He's got 9 children, 4 of which were adopted from Ethiopia. He's got a big heart on a personal level. I'm sure I would love Matt Bevin. But on a political level, you know, just from the public knowledge on a personal and political level, we'd have some serious problems because, you know, I think the courier article that he wrote, I mean, here's one part of that I think might explain it better. And what he said was, he said, I am often asked why I would even need to run for political office. The answer is a simple one. This is less the result of what I want to do and more a function of what I'm willing to do, and there is a significant difference. And I think that statement kind of sums up what I feel is going on with Matt Bevin. I think Matt Bevin doesn't want this. He says this is a result of what he wants to do, is less the result of what he wants to do and more of what he's willing to do. He's willing to stand up and put his name out there, but he's not running a race like he really wants to win it. Does that make sense? So there is a significant difference.
I think that would be a fair analysis. I mean, you know, and it could also be the wanting and willing. It could also have to do with, you know, also selling out, you know, going kowtowing to the establishment. But, you know, again, like we said when he first got in the race, it was, you always got to applaud a guy for getting in, but if you're going to get in, one of two ways to do it. Either you go all the way in, or you go all the way in a race that you can win against somebody who's vulnerable, or you go in as a paper candidate and you get your petition, your two signatures if you're a Republican or Democrat, and you go in as a paper candidate, and you try to put a few issues up there and enjoy the ride. But it's kind of a weird. It's kind of a weird amount of money being invested, and it's really turning into more of a vehicle for sort of extremist groups based on some of these ads.
I don't know.
It's a vehicle. It's a primary challenge for them to kind of open season bash on Mitt. I don't think they're backing a candidate that they actually think can win, but it's definitely somebody leaving the door open for an outside group, a super PAC, to come in and bash on whoever they want to.
Well, I think that's a good analogy. I really do. He went on to say that, our nation was not founded, or should it be led today, by men and women who could either be bought off or bullied. And when you look at that ad you're speaking of, and we come to the realization that right now in his campaign, and again, I'm not sure this is the real Matt Bevin, because right now in his campaign, it appears that he is being bought off by the special interest groups, getting name recognition. I'm not saying he's putting thousands of dollars in his pocket, folks. Don't get me wrong. But, there's different ways of being bought off or bullied. He's allowing himself to be used to take shots at Mitch for whatever, of you is paying for all this stuff, knowing that he's not going to win, but down the road he's hoping that recognition helps him. I don't know. Really
personally, if I were running Bevin's campaign, you hate to turn away a gift horse in the mouth, but this ad, he could have gotten a lot of points because it is a super PAC, so technically he's not allowed to speak with them or coordinate with them.
Yeah, but we found out with Brian Simpson how that works.
But to come out and say, I do not, I wish they would take that ad down. That's not what I'm about. It would be a much better move than to let this thing run for weeks on end and have it tied to you because unless that's the way he feels. If that's the way he feels, then come on out and tell us that's the way you feel, and that's the reason that ad's still running, because you're not going to publicly denounce it and ask him to take it down publicly.
Well, I agree with you. I just think it's pretty interesting. I just hate to see it because I think he is a good guy. From what I know about, the public record, again, I don't know him on a personal level, but the public record on his personal life and the things he's been through, he did save Bevin Bill. We had questions about that. He stepped in and fixed all of that. Mitch went way overboard with the claims on that. They were proven to be false later. There's a lot of good things to like about him on a personal level, publicly. But from this, from the reality, from the political spectrum, which we specialize in, this really is disturbing. I'd love to sit down with him, help him fire his campaign manager, and show him how to run a real campaign. Even running in 2006 for mayor, I knew I was not going to win that race. But I still went out and fought it with everything I had. You don't just run a race and not try to do anything with it. I went out there and fought for everything I had because regardless of what the world thought, my name was out there. I'm the candidate. I'm going to push the envelope, and I'm just not seeing that.
Yep.
I'm just not seeing it. I'm seeing this stuff that you're talking about.
You can't let a third-party group define who you are, which, like I say, if that's how Matt Bevin feels, if he doesn't come out and denounce that ad and ask for that ad to be taken down, then we're left to believe that,
right.
That's where he's coming from.
Guilt by association. I agree with you. And then we got another situation here still going on from late last week. Wednesday night I was talking with Dale the Truth on air, and he was talking about Andrew Beshear would be the one that Governor Steve Beshear hires to take on this gay marriage issue that we've got here in Kentucky, which we both know isn't going to happen. But it was an interesting contrast because, You know, there was an article that came out at Kentucky.com last Wednesday that I didn't bring up in time, and I apologize. But, you know, Stephen Scheer talked Wednesday and said that his son, Andrew Scheer, who was a candidate for attorney general in 2015, had played no role in Stephen Scheer's decision to appeal the judge's ruling. Now, I actually think that that's a lie. In my opinion, ain't no way Steve Beshear didn't talk to his son Andrew about that, because let's face it, they're both attorneys, and they both are involved with the same people, Stites and Harbison, who I think is going to be involved or somebody along that character that's got ties to Steve Beshear getting the money. But, you know, he said this at a news conference in the Capitol, and it was interesting. He said he told Andrew what his decision was after he made it, and said that we owe that to the individuals involved, we owe that to employers, to healthcare providers, to government agencies, and to a lot of other folks who are going to be affected by this decision. Do you believe in that?
Well, I said the night I was on the jag, you know, that I think that's what you need to do. You need to push it through to its conclusion, get the decision either denied or reaffirmed at a higher court. That gives more certitude to people who are going to have to live with the law.
Well,
now, as far, and of course, the night I was on the job, I actually suggested, you know what, Andrew Beshear wants to be the next attorney general. I think he should be the one to pick it up. Now, you speak in terms of the money. If Steve Beshear sticks to what he said, it's not a lot of money unless they fudge the hours. A buck, excuse me. $125 an hour is not that big it's not a real good rate for somebody arguing at this level. So,
right.
I think Andrew Beshear ought to pick it up, because obviously Jack has shown us that he doesn't have the emotional stability to argue it. He doesn't. He's not a very good litigator from everything we've heard. So, maybe Jack wasn't the right guy to do it. So, if Andrew Beshear, I think, should pick it up, you know, $125 an hour, believe me, attorneys aren't getting rich at $125 an hour, not with all the backup help and stuff they got to do. But I think Andrew Beshear should pick it up. It's like, you want to be the attorney general? Fine. Show us what you can do, what the current attorney general won't do or can't do. It might be an improvement. Tell us why you're doing it, and then do it. You know, Steve Beshear did a good job explaining that, in my opinion. It does need to be taken as far as it can be taken, you know, within reason. It doesn't have to go all the way to the United States Supreme Court, but it does need to, you know, be run through the appellate at least once, because if it's not, and, you know, a friend of the show, Jacob Conway, he and I had this discussion, if it's not, sooner or later, you know, before any limitations run out or anything, some well-funded individual or well-funded right-wing conservative group or somebody is going to put the money up. They're going to, read it over and over and over. They're going to put the money up, and they'll appeal it. Maybe 1, 2, 3 years down the road, it'll get challenged if it hasn't been affirmed enough. So, I think it's a good move on Steve Beshear's part to do this. I think Andrew Beshear wants to be our AG. I think he should be the one to do it.
Well, I agree with you there. I mean, the thing is, this is nobody's really paying attention to, because you have been consistent with that from the very beginning. But, you know, this is actually probably going to save us, and you have to say probably, because you really never know what direction people are going to do. But in today's age, you know, lawsuits are just filed just to be filed anymore. And what this is ultimately going to do, in my opinion, by doing this now, it's actually going to save us money in the long run, so that we don't have to continue going back and fighting different lawsuits that come up. It saves us fighting 10 different lawsuits, you know, then that saves us mega bucks. So I think Steve Beshear is actually right. This is what we spoke about this week. And I think John Conway is nothing but a measly little worm who don't have the cojones to do his job. So, you know, but I just wanted to get your opinion on that. You know, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk a few other things, including one of our great corporate wealth people, General Electric. Yep, you heard me right. And the Cordes Group. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, yes, we are back right here at the Ed Springson Show on the MVM Radio Network. You guys want to call in, the call-in number is, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys who are listening to you, just hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you on air as soon as possible. And for everybody else, you know, sign on in through Facebook or anything else and jump right into the chat. We'd love to see you in there. In the meantime, you know, Ed, I had this sent to me right when we went to break, and I thought it was pretty interesting. You're talking about the frivolity, the way Matt Evan runs this campaign. Well, here's one that shouldn't surprise anybody. He just released a 60-second radio ad through Clear Channel, 84 WHAS, spending thousands of dollars for that. And in return, Mandy Connell gave him her endorsement. And no, I'm not bashing Mandy Connell. I'll be quite honest with you, Mandy Connell is a Tea Party activist, and she was going to endorse Bevin anyway. But don't think for one second that this isn't somehow tied. The Clear Channel here in Louisville is getting thousands of dollars in ad revenue by lending Mandy Connell's voice, who is in Denver, Colorado, you know, to this ad. I just thought it was a pretty interesting coincidence here. But... You know, that's the way it works. You know, again, I think you mentioned
you don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. You don't know if the endorsement came and then they says, okay, release the commercial, or if the commercial was plugged in and the endorsement came. You don't know which way it goes. So.
Well, they all came at the same time. But what's interesting here is Mandy Connell is in Denver, Colorado. Let me be real clear here. Mandy Connell is very, very conservative, and I like Mandy Connell. I think sometimes she goes to extremes on issues, but I like Mandy Connell. We've talked several times. I've been a guest on her show here in Louisville and in Denver, Colorado, and I think the world of her. But I just think it's interesting that here we go. And, you know, and a sad reality is Leland Conway took over the morning spot, and it's been that morning spot for months. Mandy Connell's old morning spot for months. Why wasn't Lee Conway the local voice of the 84 radio, you know, morning personalities, the local voice? Why wasn't Leland Conway, you know, and it's nothing against Mandy Connell, but she's in Denver. She's not heard every day on Louisville radio anymore. Hasn't been a long time. So why was Leland Conway that voice? Because that would relate to the WHAS listeners, would it not, being their own local radio personality?
Yeah. Well, I think, for one thing, I think Leland Conway, to his credit as a broadcast journalist, he actually stays away from endorsing too hard. So that might be part of it. He may also be looking at it along the lines of, you know, I'm new in town. I'm not going to go making political enemies yet.
But they have to ask the obvious question, because we always talk about ethics journalism, right? Now, I understand that you know, everybody, like me, we've got talk radio, it's opinion radio show. You know, it's our opinions. People believe, you know, we aren't our audience and allowed to express their opinions, whether we agree or disagree, it's an even thing. But Clear Channel is a corporation, okay? They're not allowed to give endorsements of political candidates, and yet allowed their own employee, who is a primetime radio personality that is paid by Clear Channel Communications, to give an endorsement. And they're getting paid ad revenue. Is there something not right here? Is the FCC, should they be concerned with that?
Well, I don't know if the FCC, I don't know if it goes so far as the FCC, but yeah, I agree with you. It does, you know, even if you're out of town, there's not enough distance there. I don't think journalists, along the lines of Walter Cronkite, they always used to say the thing about Walter Cronkite, he never endorsed anybody. They said he actually kept his politics out of his business enough that a lot of people never could quite figure out if he was a Democrat or a Republican because he kept his personal opinions out of it. So, you know, at least as far as party politics. So, yeah, I think it's a faux pas. I think it's a mistake for a broadcast journalist to come out and endorse someone.
Yeah,
you've got a conservative broadcast journalist, and you've got a liberal Democrat running against a conservative or even a neocon Republican. That's pretty obvious. But to insert yourself into a campaign that's ongoing, where two candidates are jockeying for who's Mr. Conservative and who's not. I agree with you. I think there's an air of impropriety to it.
Well, and I think so too. I'm actually going to look into that because I think that could bring even more issues for Matt, and it really disturbs me because it should not be a question. I'm just surprised by it. That's all. But as I promised before we went into break, we got a few other things to get into here. Hang on one second here.
Hello.
Oh, it's me, man. I apologize. I felt like I had to sneeze for a second. Still do, and I can't get it out.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. There we go. Anyway. We have another story coming out here in Frankfurt. Passed overwhelmingly passed legislation that was going to extend about $15 million a year in state tax incentives to GE Plus Park. There was no dissent. It was passed on Thursday. House Bill 396. It's going to extend benefits of the Kentucky Job Retention Act that has previously only been available to car makers like Ford and Toyota. Now it's going to extend to manufacturers of appliances like GE. The interesting thing here is, for me, GE, one, GE is not processing any new jobs, none at all. The partner, is Larry Clark. Larry Clark is stating this is going to spark a $325 million investment by GE in exchange for $15 million of state tax incentives. It's really not going to do anything. It's going to bring new product lines, but it's not going to bring any new jobs. Earl Jones, the senior counsel for GE, made that very clear that they were promising no new jobs. But by giving them $15 million in tax incentives, they're going to preserve the existing jobs. How far do we go with this corporate welfare? GE continues to make profits, but they don't pay any taxes. And they continue taking money from taxes. How does this continue going on?
Well, I mean, they're connected. GE's got, you know, they've got connections all throughout. Let's face it, they own NBC. Okay, big one there.
Sure.
So you know what? You wanna kick the tiger? You go right ahead. You know, they own NBC, so they could ruin your ass on local TV stations. You know, to set the word down. It's like this clown, no positive. This clown. Only negative stories. They, you know, they've got the muscle to do that if they want to do it. GE commands commands an audience. You know, they can their press conference. I always give people a hard way to go about the press conference, and especially with
right.
like GE, it's like every local politician that, you know, they're so breathless when they get to sit there and they get to put on their ridiculous looking, ill fitting yellow safety hats and. They're even goofier-looking safety glasses and act like, you know, oh, look, we're bringing jobs back to America and blah, blah, blah. And then a week and a half later, they'll be back at their other job going, we have to end corporate welfare. It's just atrocious. It's just unforgivable that these corporations are making billions of dollars and not paying any money in taxes. It's like, wow. Wonder how the hell that happened. You know?
I'm telling you.
So yeah, it's just like that. They've got a lot of muscle. They you know, media wise, the PR wise, you know, GE speaks, people listen, and they use it. And you know what? I'm almost okay with that. Actually, I'm not at all okay with that. But if there would just be some honesty amongst the politicians, you know, it's like, look, if you're going to sit up there and you're going to suck up the GE, then
right.
for God's sake, don't blow me all that sunshine up my butt later on, 30 days later, about how corporate, how major corporations don't pay their fair, you know, businesses don't pay their fair share in taxes. You know what? You're right.
Well, see, that's
it's
exactly
because
it.
Of you.
Well, you know, that's exactly it, because the Republicans continue to talk about corporate welfare. You know, the conservatives, right? Smaller government, less taxes, all that good stuff. This thing was approved without dissent. There was dissent within the House Budget Committee. So it's very disturbing to me continuing to do this stuff. $15 million, I mean, let's face it, folks. If somebody like me, I'd be a rich man for life. But for a comp $15 million, that's like giving them bucks about Starbucks coffee. Why was this money so important to GE? If they have indeed invested $800 million in Appliance Park, as they claim they have, and, you know, I have no reason not to believe that claim, you know, but this post has been to retention, research and development, and eventually lead to new product lines, although it's not going to lead to any new jobs. So GE basically wants our tax money to help them upgrade their existing facility. They don't want to pay for it themselves. It's just disturbing. But I tell you, what's really interesting
well,
to me,
it's,
too.
It's not only that, but look, when you invest in research and development, you write it off. In the
right.
normal course of business, even if you don't have government sucking up to you, you write it off. If you buy new equipment, you make new capital investments, over time, you get to write it down. So at some point, it's like, okay, you're giving them tax incentives to do things that they are going to ultimately deduct from the bottom line anyway.
Right.
So basically, you're doubling down on them. You're doubling down on them. You're saying, okay, we're going to give you a tax incentive, but it's not like they're saying, oh, we're just going to accelerate the tax write-off for what you're doing. It's like, no, so you get a tax write-off, and then you get another tax write-off. You know, it's not like they're giving up the standard tax write-off. So
right.
it's big stuff. And when you say $15 million, you got to understand, if depending on your tax rate, that's like saying to a company, hey, guess what? The first, whatever, $60 million you make, you don't have to pay any taxes on it.
Right, right. Yeah, and
you know,
that's
wouldn't that be nice? It's kind of like an earned income tax credit for major multinational corporations.
Well, you know, and exactly it. I find it very interesting in the last part here, because one of the stories that we've been covering for months now, and we're still involved, it's still followed, the lawsuit from former Ford employee Dave Morgan against Mayor Fisher and Reverend Kevin Cosby. It's interesting because one thing in the article says that Earl Jones, senior counsel, as I mentioned a minute ago, added GE is now working with the University of Louisville on Advantology. They hope to be making some additional announcements soon. You know, this is really interesting because this advanced technology that they're talking about is indeed the workplace development training that we were talking about and have been talking about for months. The back plan when JCTC and Simmons College decided to play this scam on everybody, in my opinion, was the University of Louisville. The University of Louisville has been involved in those discussions for quite some time behind the scenes, and GE was one of the working operative people who wanted the workplace training facility at 8th and Kentucky. So now they're working with the University of Louisville on their own, or they've went with Ford and UPS and all the other people because JCTC decided to get too greedy and all the other things. So it's going to be interesting to see what that announcement is going to be. But I can promise you when that announcement comes, I'm going to be out there telling you, see, I was right again. And I hate being that way. I really do. I hate tooting my own horn, but damn, toot, toot. But anyway, we've got other news. Our good friends, the Cordish Company. Our good friends, the Cordish Company. Yes, you know, those blessed saviors of Louisville, Kentucky.
We know them. We love them.
Well, you can go to edspringson.com, type Cordish into the search engine, and you can find anything you want to about these clowns. But the Cordish Company, the Cordish Group has not made a profit, or they've never returned a dime. There is a profit-sharing agreement with Cordish and the City of Louisville, and the City of Louisville has never gotten one dime from them. The Cordish Group has failed to follow through, and have been called to task by the Metro Council itself on promises that they had agreed to when they developed 4th Street Live. Well, now we've got a city block in the heart of downtown Louisville that is now going to get a 600-room luxury hotel, a major grocery store. You can define major as that upscale, is that downscale, is it Kroger, Value Market? No, a major grocery store, which means it's going to be one of the high-end retail grocery stores. It's going to get more retail stores and about 200 apartments. It's part of a $261 million project that was announced Thursday. Here's what we got. Louisville and Kentucky are putting together financing to help with this. They're joining with Omni Hotels and Resorts, and you guessed it, the Cordish Company, to build this massive thing within 3 years. It's going to be down around the Louisville Water Company block, the old Louisville Water Company block, where we wanted the arena to go. It'll be the 2nd, 3rd, and Liberty and Muhammad Ali area. But anyway, it's interesting because the project's cost is going to be split between the public and private partners. $105 million from Omni, $30 million from Cordish. Now pay attention to that number. That's $135 million these people are putting up. And oh, by the way, Louisville and Kentucky are going to put up $126 million. We're financing half of this joint venture to help Cordish Group stay afloat that has never returned a dime to us. Now we're going to invest another $126 million that's going to be part of that. Cordish is going to develop the 200 apartments. Omni is going to develop the hotel. The state's put up $90.5 million. The city's going to contribute $35.5 million. What is the deal here? Oh, by the way, I wanted to point this out too. They're going to put a new financing district within the block and around it, so that they can get a portion of the new tax revenue help to finance. So we're going to add another tax increment funding crap here. Ed, what do you do?
I don't know. I tell you, as a small business person, you find yourself at a loss sometimes. It's like, wow, you know, I look at it and say, gee, you could have got me to relocate downtown a lot cheaper than that. Might not have brought as many jobs, but for one-hundredth the cost, you could bring some small businesses in. But, you know, hey, we all crap on small businesses, right? But, I hear that, and I'm thinking, well, what is the advantage to the city? I mean, how much tax revenue or jobs or how desperate are we that we literally, just like, you know, GE, you go giving away hundreds of millions of dollars, you may get it back, but to co-sign on loans for big boy companies, you know, they've got the money. Mm-hmm. If it's going to pay, they'll invest in it. It's just like, you know, and that's the thing, is it? It amazes me how these major players do not act like big boys. You know, the fact is, you've got a winner, and you're gonna build equity and net worth in your company and cash flow, and it's a good plan. You don't need a city to step up and hold your hand through it. You can just say, yeah, we got this. You know, and I got Yeah, you leverage them for some tax incentives, sure, because you can. But
well, especially,
but for that,
you know,
for that percentage of it, for that weight. Now, granted, the one thing I can say about it that, you know, look, if this is what it takes, the land's vacant right now, so it's, you know, it's not generating any revenue, it's not generating any jobs, so that's a good thing. But again, it's almost sometimes an insult to the working people and to the taxpayers and to the residents of Louisville to say, look, it's a great place to do business, which is why we have to give people money to come here and give you a job because you know, without a subsidy, you are not employable. Without a subsidy, without us picking up half the tab, they will not show up. Your date will not show up.
so maybe
like,
we need to take ourselves.
That's like a father. That's like a father paying some girl to go to the prom with his son. You know, it's like, dude, guess what? She doesn't really like you that much if your old man has to pay for them to accompany you.
Oh, that's it, man. I mean, and that's the whole thing. That's just one more example of why our tax rates are too high. We would have to give money back if we were one of the highest tax cities in the nation or one of the highest tax states. If we were daggone lower our overall tax rate, then business would come here automatically without all these incentives. It's nuts. Steve Rowland, the city's chief financial officer, he also said that the city is going to issue $104 million in bonds, and probably for about a 30-year term. That's going to get the money that we need to build this project. So the city is going to guarantee the bonds, but Steve Rowland is swearing up and down that the project is going to generate enough tax revenue to cover the debt. Didn't we hear the same thing with the KFC Yum Center? And we're still giving them, what, $8 to $9 million a year?
KFC Yum Center, 4th Street Live.
Gotcha. You betcha. And, of course, Greg Fisher is saying, you know, is praising his own name and said he's been negotiating this deal for more than a year and bragging about it creating 1,350 construction jobs and 350 permanent positions. So let's look at this project. 3-year max temporary construction jobs. 1,350 people are on a 3-year temporary employment row. 350 permanent positions. If you look at everything they're doing here, the apartments, the hotel, these are low-wage service economy.
If you're going to prorate it, those construction jobs are not 3-year jobs. You're gonna have your steel guys. They're going to get in. They're going to be done. They're going to get out. You know, that counts against that 1,300 number or whatever. Then your concrete guys are going to get in, and they're going to get out. And then your plumbing guys, your electrician guys, your HVAC guys are going to get in, and they're going to get out. They're not going to be here for a while.
Right, exactly.
But
so,
when you're breaking ground, you're counting those HVAC guys. They're not even on the job until the superstructure is dried in, okay? Yeah, it might be 1,300 jobs. Actually, I would say most of them are probably a 16- to 18-month job. They're not going to be. It's going to be over the course of 3 years, 1,300 jobs will come and go. You know,
well, I think your
concrete guys will be long gone, and your heavy equipment guys will be long gone while your finished carpenters and your carpet layers are busting ass in this place. So it's not even that many jobs at one given time or for the duration of the project. It's over the course of 3 years or whatever, that's how many people will be on site, on and off.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, and that is the problem because here we are. We are going to spend $135 million, and we're going to create essentially 350 permanent jobs. Now, let's look at this realistically. The permanent jobs are costing the taxpayers $386,000 apiece. I mean, that's basically what it is. I didn't include the construction guys in that because, you know, if Cordes and Omni are going to put up half the money, let's go ahead and let them be responsible for that cost. $386,000 apiece for 350 people to work for service wage, low economic wages. How do you justify that?
I don't know.
You know, it makes no sense.
I don't know. And on top of that, you know, they can talk all the revenue crap they want to talk, but you know, we don't just happen to have all these companies sitting around in Louisville, so it's also entirely possible that not unlike the Bridges Project, that these workers are transient. Not only are they not going to be here for the, you know, the oversold 3 years or whatever, you know, they're going to be here for a handful of months, but they're probably not even going to be local.
And I'm totally with you, and that is a major problem for me. I don't get it. It's fascinating that we continue going down this road. We are already giving KFC Yum Center money, as we pointed out. 4th Street Live hasn't made money, as we pointed out. You know, all these different things. We keep trying to make ourselves this big city, and we're still trying to get, you know, we've still got those out there who continue trying to fight for this NBA team. And I'll be honest with you, we're spending all this money probably just to make it look like we've got a downtown that can handle it, which we don't. You know, it's just really disturbing to me where we're going with this. It's crazy. I mean, it really is. But I tell you what else is crazy, too, Ed, because it never seems to fail. We are at the end of the hour. It's time for final thoughts.
Well, you know, final thoughts always end up in the same place. Is stay cynical. I tell people to, you know, stay cynical. And when you see something like a hotel, you know, there's positives to it. I'm not going to – it's vacant lot right now. That's cool. I'm okay with that. But when you see these deals and you hear the mayor say, well, I've been working on this for a year and a half – my first thought is wow, it took you, okay, you know, that's good. Thank you for your effort. My second thought is, wow, you've been working on it for a year and a half, and we only get to hear about it when you line up every butt kisser in the county behind you and every corporate welfare recipient involved in the project behind you, and you announce it. So where's the transparency? I mean, you know, he talks about, our mayor talks about wanting the local tax, you know, the ability to vote on local incremental taxes and stuff. I look at it and says, well, you know, you want us to vote on that. Why don't we ever get a say-so in the projects that you've been working a year and a half on? Obviously, behind closed doors, you know, and then you tell us what you're going to do. But then, when it comes to taxes, it's like, you know, I think in this modern era, please give us some transparency so that people can weigh in on it. I mean, if you told me, you're going to build a hotel, I'd say, great. You told me you build apartments, I'd say, great. He said, if you know, in the name of transparency, you're going to build it, and you're going to build a grocery store, I'd say, great. But I'm sorry, I don't want to be cynical, but then you tell us, oh, yeah, we're going to pick up half the tab. Private sector outfit's going to reap all the profits, you know. And I think, wait a minute, you know, it's like, why don't we have a say-so in this? You know, you want to give us a say-so if you raise taxes on us, you know, and that, thank you. Thank you for giving us a say-so on it, if they ever get to that. But how about you give us a say-so on whether we want to lower taxes on somebody from out of town, you know? Why don't we ever get a say-so in that? And that's transparency. This is a modern era. Put that stuff out there. You know, I wish all cities would do it. But, you know, these companies like Cordis, they're not going to do that because it's the last thing in the world they want people to do, is be keeping an eye on the negotiations. And then the first time the words tax incentives or tax abatements or tax credits come up, that's when the citizens look at it and go, wait a minute. I don't get any tax incentives. My small business doesn't get any tax incentives. No, make it pay or move along.
Well, and I totally agree with you.
Demand transparency.
I totally agree with you. And when I look at things like the KFC Yum Center, when I look at the Cordis Group failure at 4th Street Live, you know, they go through tenants like water down there. You know, their tenants are constantly turning over because they can't afford to stay there and pay the rent. When I look at tax incentives, we gave a place to serve food in a bowling alley millions of dollars with the Cordis Group to turn it into a bowling alley that serves food, or vice versa. You know, you've got all of these different things, and then you add all this stuff, and it's costing the taxpayers millions of dollars. Then you look at the other deals going on, like the VA hospital land. Jonathan Blue, political supporter, Democrat friend, you know, he gets 31% increase in the value of the land where they want to put the VA hospital in 1 year. So now they're going to give him 31% more money to buy this land from him. Why? As a political payback. And that is the problem. We have to start getting transparent. We have to start getting accountability. And that's why you have people like me out there doing this kind of stuff, beating the hell out of everybody and trying to force them into submission. That's what we do, Ed. That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, don't forget to come back. We are going to bring up a few things, including President Obama's favorite reverend, Reverend Jeremiah, I Hate America, Right? Little daughter just got convicted for theft, and she'll be sentenced soon. We'll talk about that story and more tomorrow night at 7. Until then, folks, have a great night. Thank you, Mr. Martin.
All right. Have a good one, Mr. Springsteen.
Take care. Have a great night, folks.
All right. Come back.